Astonishing Legends Network.
The following is intended for bizarre audiences only. Welcome to the Midnight Library.
Madam, what in Looper's name is that revolting, wet, stinking thing?
Well, hold your snout. It appears to be a waterlogged letter.
Uh-oh.
There's hair clippings in it. Dear Sister Merrick, accept this advanced payment from our coven for ad space and your personal endorsement of the Evil Witches Yacht Club.
Oh.
We need new members for reasons. You have been told. Kisses, Wicked Wendy, present.
What's just happened?
I'm going to have to accept this coven of water witches as sponsors. That's what's happened.
Aw, how nice. What's the bit about the present?
There's no gift, darling. Wicked Wendy is present. She's here.
Uh-oh.
Good evening. Oh, you're new. Do I know you? You're Fanny Farmer from the candy shop. Oh, how lovely. welcome, and please take your seat. Now, oh my, how wonderful to see all of you. All of you. You're all welcome here, that's for sure. please go ahead, ahead of me, into our spacious and welcoming reading room. Everyone. Oh, if I could lie down, I would. Hello. I mean, greetings, everyone. My dear, distinguished, and honored guests, I see several new faces in the reading room this fine evening. So that's just wonderful. welcome to the Midnight Library. I'm just little old me, Miranda Merrick, and I'm positively thrilled that you've chosen to leave whatever important things I'm sure you were doing with your tightly knit company of friends in order to come here and check on what sort of important, sacred, but not too over-the-top revealing information we're handing out to the public. Being you, the public, of course. My word, how exciting that you're here, and not unsettling at all. Let's get to the hospitality tray. Oh, tonight on the hospitality tray, we have a selection of seasonal items to suit our informative reading. For winter, there are old-fashioned roasted chestnuts from Phantom Forest. For spring, unborn fowl or eggs of some sort, also from Phantom Forest. The fall item, I'm afraid, is missing, as no one could catch what we had in mind to serve. Good! Natasha has arrived with a late request that I made. thank you, Natasha. Thank you. And here we have some kind of freshly prepared undersea gumbo. I can see pink gills, gray tentacles, and floating eyes, and what looks like a yummy sailor's thumb. But I'm sure it's not. For anyone here who is accustomed to such delights. Why the seafood? For summer, when people fish. Silly. Welcome to the Midnight Library, my dear guests. I am your hopeful host, Miranda Merrick. I say hopeful because tonight I hope to coax you into learning about and perhaps getting yourself some form of or copy of The Wheel of the Year. My lovelies, it occurred to me not so very long ago that many human people, too many in my opinion, do not know about the charming old world traditions of the now somewhat antiquated but totally still applicable Wheel of the Year. Now, some did and do refer to it as the Witch's Wheel of the Year. But we'll get to this enchanting aspect of the old calendar as we move through it. But I should first like to declare that this not quite so bygone way of marking the passage of time as the planet Earth traverses the heavens, that this calendar, with its uniquely marked days of feasts, customs, and festivals, is not in any way in opposition of or working toward the exclusion of any type of religion, as some may belabor under the misconception that it is. It is simply the way things used to be long ago, and still is for many the world over today. It doesn't harm or discount any other or more modern traditions of marking the same calendar now. Like life itself, it's all what you wish to make of it in your own heart and mind. This presentation is an examination of how the year went in days gone by, and for some, presently. Knowing about it cannot harm you in any way, any more than looking at an old tintype photograph. It's simply a lovely old tradition. Let us begin. Long ago, when the skies were truly brilliant with our home galaxy, the Milky Way, with its dazzling court of planetary luminaries strewn across the heavens each night, our ancestors understood that if they took note of the movements of these celestial bodies, they would eventually understand more about their own planet. And they did. Early civilizations soon understood very well that the Earth was performing a compulsory orbit, an elliptical dance traveling around our life-giving sun. In the period of time, roughly 365 days, that became labeled as a solar or sidereal year. And because it happens to be a fun fact to know, our sun completes a similar path on its own compulsory orbit around the Milky Way galaxy, too. Only this path is not completed within a year. It takes the sun, with us in tow, roughly 240 million years to make one complete orbit around our galaxy. In total, the Sun is believed to have only made roughly 20 trips around the Milky Way. Its complete rotation is referred to as a cosmic year or a galactic year. The last time the Sun was at the point in its path that it is now, there were dinosaurs roaming the Earth. So we are very new here. It's rather ironic that the Earth has quietly been going about its route, just passively spinning and spinning, while we came into being and took literally eons to evolve, to smarten up and pay attention, enough to learn and name what it had been doing seemingly forever without us. And one day, hopefully far, far into the future, the Earth will return to completing its many treks over and over again without us. So, the Wheel of the Year was a way of visualizing the ebb and flow of time. Night into day, days into weeks, weeks into months, and the months adding up to one year. The clues were always in the various constellations moving through the firmament, seasons with their changes in temperature, bringing forth fruits and foliage, the animals constructing nests and storing up food. All of these patterns were noted and written down by the ancient Sumerians, the Celtic people, and Germanic and Norse tribes, thousands of years ago. I'm going to be brutally honest with you here and say that I do believe they were curious but also bored and lonely and looking for reasons to party. There's nothing evil or disrespectful about it. It's common now to say the word pagan in regards to the marking of time in this fashion. Pagan is not a dirty word. It's simply a label given to those who were here, doing things and following their own customs in their own way, the best way they knew how, before the others came and began doing things their way. And honestly, I see no distinction between the two. The Wheel of the Year is a beautiful old thing, and very simple. It has 8 high holidays, being 4 solar festivals and 4 fire festivals. Each of the 4 solar festivals simply mark the 2 equinoxes, the 2 times each year, having equal amounts of light and dark in the spring and fall. And the 2 solstices, the 2 times each year the Earth experiences the most amount of daylight, and the least. The 4 fire festivals were brought about by the Celtic people, and they merely celebrate the midway point between each solstice and equinox. And I'm with them on this, especially the one called Imolc. We'll get to it later, but Imolc kicks up some cheer right when everyone in the Northern Hemisphere so direly needs it, in the dead of winter. So, my lovelies. Right. How silly of me. thank you, Mr. Darling. I nearly forgot. Tonight's reading in the Midnight Library is brought to you by a wonderful, albeit confusing, sponsor. I will have to say in advance that I don't know why this particular group has chosen us as a platform for their appeals. But we, as you know, do not discriminate against anyone, and we're happy to accept their funding in whatever form it comes in. Anyway, tonight's sponsor is the Evil Witches Yacht Club. Come now, bored ones, bring your mother and daughter, and join the wily witches out upon the open water. Why toil away with your house job and chores? Come sail with the witches to exotic shores. Those who have wronged you deserve retaliation. The witches can help you with spite navigation. Learn to raise storms, raging floods, and high waves. Send the crooks, thieves, and cheaters to their watery graves. Your enemies will vanish without concern or commotion. The witches know no one looks on the bottom of the ocean. Trade it all in for the salt life you'll cherish. Join the Evil Witches Yacht Club. Paddle or perish. I'm sure that's not a threat. my word, I do hope I did that right. They seem to know exactly who they're looking for. That's for sure. You, I guess. I'm sure it's all in fun. They sound like a fun group, don't they? it says here to see Dolly at the dockhouse on any given Sunday to sign up. And there's a wee little asterisk saying that the ability to swim is not required. I'm not sure what that means. thank you for your kind patronage, Evil Witches Yacht Club. Yule. Oh my. In order to make our trek along the wheel's complete turn more suitable to our preference, my dear guests, I thought we would begin in winter, so that we might end in fall, which I know many of us prefer, for no particular reason. So, here we have the longest nights of darkness, the winter solstice, or the holiday of Yule, generally taking place between December 20th and the 22nd in the Northern Hemisphere, and roughly June 20th through the 21st in the Southern Hemisphere. The Yule season is one of the oldest known winter festivals, being literally thousands of years old. It is most definitely Norse in origin, and it has always had the themes of light and fire, with people decorating with candles and gathering around bonfires to chase away the darkness and gloom of long, cold winter nights. To picture the wheel of the year as though it were a clock, Yule would be at the position of midnight. Many believe that this lively Norse festival was once called Yol, spelled J-O-L, and some historians theorize that some manner of sacrifices were part of the celebrations early on. And these offerings, most likely herd animals, were given to appeal to or in praise of gods such as Odin and supernatural beings like elves or fairies. Or the sacrifices might have been in honor of the dead. It is also believed that the festival of Yule was from the beginning a Norse version of the Day of the Dead. This belief is bolstered by the fact that the god Odin, who went by many names, including Jolnir, spelled J-O-L-N-I-R, was considered the god of the dead. It's now easy to see how with the grassroots of this wintertime festival so very long ago, how we still have it with us today. The traditional winter colors they used of white for snow, and red for evergreens and holly berries, and gold and silver for hope and prosperity. We also have Yule logs for the fire, and the German tradition of decorating trees. Later, but before Christmas came about, the Yule lads, the 13 troublesome yet benevolent sons of Grilla and Lepaludi, left their gifts for well-behaved children, and stones or sticks for the misbehaving children. The Yule cat was also said to hunt and terrorize children. Excuse me. Children who didn't receive new clothing for the celebration. All the more reason to give gifts back then, and the true genesis of why we still give gifts today. Should I mention that Grilla was a witch that snatched misbehaving children and ate them? No, I think I'll leave that part out. Imolk. Now, let me tell you about the celebration of Imolk, the first official fire festival on the wheel. Spelled I-M-B-O-L-C, but the B is silent. Imolk is just a little uplifting thing that anyone can take part in. Imolk marks the midway point between winter and spring. It generally takes place right around the first few days of February. It's a newer celebration or holiday that has its roots in the British Isles and Ireland. And it is traditionally all about light and the first signs of spring. Those celebrating take part in feasting and purification, and preparations of renewal in anticipation of spring. The word Imolk is a very old Irish word, meaning in the belly, which was a reference to all of the pregnant sheep that were present at this time of the year. Many people today observe this day by putting in their bellies soul-warming recipes made with butter, milk, and cheese. They have braided breads and luscious little cakes with herbs and honey. All of these tempting baked goods and rich soups made with meats, carrots, and potatoes. Imolk is also associated with the Celtic goddess Brigid, and alternatively is referred to as St. Brigid's Day. Brigid was known for weaving an intricate grass cross. That cross very much is still made today. The cross was said to have soothed a dying chieftain. Brigid was the goddess of learning, healing, and crafting. Imolk would be found roughly about 1:45 on our clock or wheel. It is a fire festival due to its symbolizing the warmth returning and includes the lighting of candles and the hearth or fireplace of a home. Some might insist that Imolk be mentioned with its link to Wiccans, honoring the day with renewal or rituals of initiation, like the sweeping out of their houses of the old or dead time of year, Some believe it is a time for new witches to be welcomed into covens. But I don't think it's necessary to mention that. At least not in detail here. Ostara, located firmly at 3 o'clock on the wheel of the year. Ostara is the festival that officially welcomes spring. It takes place on the spring or vernal equinox, marking equal portions of light and dark, or right around March 21st. It's hard to beat the joy and atmosphere that Ostara brings. Flowers, butterflies, baby animals, and even fairies who were thought to be ready to frolic after a long winter's rest. Ostara is the Anglo-Saxon name for the goddess Ostir, whose very nature is that of spring, new life, and new beginnings. The day is thought by many to be the perfect time to begin a new project, as whatever it is, it will be compelled to grow right along with everything else. Ostara is filled with planning and planting and celebrated with the bright colors of yellow, orange, purple, and green. Holding hands with the modern holiday of Easter, the word Easter actually comes from the German word Ostern, which came directly from the goddess Ostir. The spring dawning day has always been about awakening from winter entirely and bringing forth action and life. Ostara is represented by reproducing bunnies and an abundance of bird eggs. The lore of the Easter Bunny began with the goddess Ostir, who turned a bird into a hare. The hare not only then laid eggs, but also decorated the eggs in honor of Ostir. It is written that those of the Wiccan faith take this time to put into action, or to plant the seeds, as it were, of the plans they made during Imolc. New witches and green witches are known to plant actual seeds, while other witches, direct their energies at cultivating new ways forward with their, let's say, lifestyle plans. I'm sure these plans are far too mundane for a sophisticated audience such as yourselves. See me after a reading if you're not all that preciously sophisticated. Beltane. Beltane? Yes, I know there's a more complex pronunciation, but we're trying to make friends here. Beltane observes the start of summer, beginning April 30th to May 1st. You'll find it located right about 4:30 or 4:40 on the wheel of the year. Beltane is all about rampant growth. This was the time of year when the plants, animals, and people could wander about more. Livestock were happily led out to literally greener pastures. Plants flourished and jumped the boundaries of their beds. And people had good enough weather to visit one another or to take a well-deserved break or to meet up. Beltane is the second fire festival of the year, and folks, when they did meet up, would often set bonfires and leap over the flames as a way of showing off and flirting. These fires were called the Fires of Bel. Bel was the Celtic sun god and the bringer of prosperity. Beltane is where the old celebratory maypoles began. And if you've never seen a maypole, you should really do a little digging to find images of them. The pole, long ago, was originally a tree, and the dance ritual began in Rome and Germany, way, way back. In a nutshell, revelers would erect a tall pole from which colorful streaming ribbons hung down. The colors were often green, red, yellow, white, and silver. The tall pole represented masculine energy, and the beautiful ribbons stood for the divine feminine. Men and women, or groups of children, would then each grasp a ribbon and dance around the pole to flute and drum music, ducking past one another and raising the ribbons over each other's heads, making a woven and brilliant design with them as they crisscrossed the pole. Have you ever heard of something so lovely and innocent? Well, brace yourself, because maypole dancing was banned by religious societies at one point in both Britain and America, because they believed the activity was immoral and encouraged heathenish behavior. You know, like people getting together and meeting up and falling in love and experiencing human touch and passion for fun. Anyway, the tradition of the maypole dance can still be found in some places today as part of Beltane, the start of the growing season. Oh yes, witches. Witches, if you believe this sort of thing, were said to revel in Beltane and actually set bonfires themselves and held dances and feasts around them. They, too, were hopeful of romance both for their animals and for themselves, and they celebrated May Day. I'll just say they didn't refer to it as the lusty month of May for no reason at all. Letha. Letha is the ancient Celtic observation of the summer solstice, the day with the most sunlight in the northern hemisphere. It appears roughly about June 20th through the 25th. On the wheel of the year, Letha falls at the 6 o'clock point. The celebration of Letha is also referred to as midsummer, and it has long been associated with the Egyptian sun god Ra because of the abundance of sunshine. And once again, because I assume you've spotted the pattern by now, the celebration was simply a time for people to get together in good weather, to eat and drink and play music and dance. The colors, of course, are all of the brilliant colors of summer. Red, pink, yellow, green, purple, and white. At this time, people decorated their homes with wreaths of roses and sunflowers as symbols of the sun. And the images of honeybees and lightning bugs have long been associated with Letha, or midsummer. During this zenith of the sun's power, bodies of water were also thought to be more powerful and filled with life, or the most fish to be found. It was common for some celebrations to be held by rivers and lakes, so people could take a little ceremonial dip to wash themselves in the sun-warmed waters, and to have a little splash about. Here, during Letha, is also where we see the first signs of old folklore, or paganism if you like, creeping back into people's awareness as midsummer was truly believed to be a time when the veil between the living and the dead began to thin. It is at this time, as referenced in some historical documents and books, that evil spirits would sometimes appear on the summer solstice to assess and see what sort of trouble or traps they might set, and that humans, in a lovely attempt to ward them off, would make and wear circlets of vines and garlands of flowers on their heads and woven into their hair to try to protect themselves from the demons. Isn't that sweet? I cannot see how that would work. Irma loves flowers. Oh, but interestingly, one plant that was thought to offer the most protection was called, get this, chase devil. And that plant is better known as St. John's wort. And what is super fascinating about St. John's wort is that it has been proven to have the health benefit of countering mild depression or seasonal affective disorder that many people suffer from through lack of sunshine in the darker parts of the year. Also, fairies in particular were believed to be much more active during the solstice, and adults and children were warned to be on guard as they traversed the forests and countryside, lest they'd be tempted by the fairies. Both the light and dark fae, by the way. Now, I wouldn't be doing my best for you, my dear guest, if I didn't mention here that witches, during midsummer, were believed to call upon the fae whilst performing the Letha rituals of dancing or bathing to strengthen their spells and blessing their enterprises. That's what people used to say. Anyway. Lunasa. Now, the foodies among you will be thrilled that we have reached Lunasa. Spelled L-U-G-H-N-A-S-A-D-H. Lunasa is found at the 740 mark on the Wheel of the Year. Named after the ancient Irish god Lu in honor of his stepmother, Lunasa, or Lammas, is also called the Festival of the Loaves and is hugely celebrated by making bread, all kinds of bread. It is the third fire festival of the year, and the fire is mainly associated with the home fires or fireplace or the cooking hearth as it pertains to baking. People and families gathered to share in the act of collecting grains that had hopefully flourished all summer and would now be ground into flour to make the wonderful loaves with. In past times, the baking was so important. People were known to gather and to share and to celebrate with all of their various breads and cakes. As you may have guessed, the symbols of this feast day were and or are sunflowers, sheaves or bundles of wheat and grains, and the tools of the harvest, such as shears and scythes. Images of these farm tools were often carved into the serving platters and plates. The brilliant colors of ripe vegetables and grains, being yellow, green, and orange, were splashed everywhere. You may have also guessed that as well as feasting, there was also included in the celebration music and dancing. But to put their bread-powered energies to work, there were also games or competitions like archery, axe throwing, hurling, handball, and teams playing tug of war. And the winners undoubtedly won loaves of bread. The other fun aspect of Lunasa is the making of corn dollies. The bygone legend tells of the spirit of the corn, who created a doll from her own husks to lovingly give to and entertain children. Traditionally, the husk-made doll that is generally 6 inches or so tall is made from the last sheaf of corn cut down during the harvest. The little doll symbolizes the life force of the field that is held within her. Kept safely inside your home, the little doll has the power to ensure the success of the next growing season. There isn't a tremendous amount of witch lore associated with Lunasa, other than they too tended to and gave thanks for their garden-grown crops, and often gathered with their sisters or coven members for what was alternatively called the Feast of Gathering In. There is another aspect of the corn dollies, though. Some of the corn husk dolls were given tiny straw brooms and pointed husk hats. Maybon. Aw, Maybon. If you don't think anyone you know would enjoy Maybon, you may need to get some new friends. Maybon, held during the autumnal equinox or equal parts of night and day during autumn, is the Feast of Gratitude. Falling firmly at 9 o'clock upon the wheel of the year, or right around September 20th through the 22nd, this reflective celebration is all about looking back on every good thing that came your way in the months before, and even being grateful for the trying or sad times that caused you to appreciate what you have, or what or who it's been an honor to know. Maybon is a time to appreciate everything that's happened, that's helped you to grow, or sustained you and those around you. Here we find the russet colors of fall tinting the celebration, with maroon, brown, beige, orange, and faded green and spent yellow colors all around. Meals at this time are made with some of the last harvested foods. There are large and small gatherings, candlelight dinners, often with wine and preserved fruits. This is the warm, appreciative atmosphere found during Maybon. For people in the past who lived in more rural areas, Maybon was a time to check on and share your bounty with your neighbors just a few acres away. That elderly gentleman who recently lost his wife, he would be invited to a neighbor's home, and preserves his wife would have made would be given to him from everyone's stock. This real brotherhood promoted caring and balance to everyone's life. For those with a pagan or even Wiccan life path, the making of Maybon altars with leaves, berries, and vines was, or is, one of their activities. They then light candles and meditate or recall with reverence the passing of the seasons and the balance each of the seasons offer. Quiet walks in nature to observe its many changes in colors and even the changes in the coats of fur on the animals is a good way to be introspective during Maybon. Some prepare lists of all of the things they are grateful for. Since at this time, the apple harvest was the focus of many communities, the last of the apples were pressed into cider or made into jellies and butters. It also wasn't uncommon in the past for single people to perform a little romantic apple divination. They would peel the apples and then toss the loose skins over their shoulders and then look for the initials of their true love. In the letter shapes, the apple peels had predictively spelled upon the floor. Samhain. Now, my lovelies, let us talk of Samhain, the final fire festival of the Wheel of the Year, to be found right about at 10:45 or so on the wheel. Another curiously spelled word with a very non-intuitive pronunciation. The word is spelled Samhain. It is Gaelic in origin and pronounced Samhain or Samhain, and simply means summer's end. And indeed it is. The observance or festival is generally held from October 31st through November 1st. And for most, it is forever tied to Halloween and or All Saints' Day. Again, it is a fire festival, and it's perfectly suited to the massive bonfires that have been held at this time of year for thousands of years. Long, long ago, animal bones were consigned to the flames to mix the element of fire with the bones that once contained the energy of life. Back then, bonfires were first called bonfires. There were intimate bonfires for lone families and groups of neighbors, and huge community bonfires for people from villages and towns to come out to join in the company of others. The reason? To recognize the turning of the seasons, the descent into the darkest part of the year, and to honor the turning of the Wheel of the Year. Oh, and of course, there was music, dancing, and food, the joys of life. Now dressed in the autumnal colors of dark red, purple, orange, yellow, and brown, this time of year is clearly a favorite for the many who prefer a little chill in the air that carries the falling leaves. Samhain has long been associated with several of the old gods, such as the chief Norse god Odin, the horned god Sornunos, and Hades. And before the name of Hades sets off any alarm with anyone, "Oh no, she said Hades, we're all gonna get set on fire," or whatever people think or assume these days. Hades was the old Greek god of the underworld. He was tasked with the escorting of the dead to the underworld and made sure that they stayed there. In addition, he doled out punishment to any who were truly wicked. He also managed a gold chariot with four wild immortal horses, a vicious three-headed dog, and a magic hat that made him invisible. So let's all show him a little admiration for keeping all those strange balls in the air, shall we? Where was I? Samhain, as you might know, was hugely popular with the Druids. They believed, as many of us still do today, that Samhain, or Halloween, was the pinpointed time of the year when the veil between the living spirits residing in bodies and the dead spirits residing without their bodies, that this veil was at its thinnest and permitted the mingling of the two types of spirits and other types of spirits, like fairies and
demons.
And perhaps angels, I guess. Druids, I'm sure you'll like to know, were a very spiritual and priestly class of people who were descended from ancient Celtic peoples from Britain, Ireland, and the land of Gaul, which is now France and part of Western Europe. The very word druid is so old that no one truly knows the origin of it.
Witches.
Excuse me. Yes, witches, but not only witches take the time during Samhain very seriously. To us, it is a time to remember and to honor the dead. Many people create altars that are comprised of pictures of loved ones, both people and pets. Candles are lit as the bygone form of illumination and incense, and little offerings are consumed in the flames as we remember those we've lost. It is true that some choose this precise time to try to make contact with those they've lost. Broken hearts will drive people to do all sorts of strange behavior. So, I don't blame them. One more thing, and maybe you'd like to do this yourself. Many observers of Samhain hold what's called a dumb supper, or silent dinner. They prepare a meal and set a table for themselves and a single empty chair, or several. Some create place settings from tombstone rubbings for their loved ones. The dinner is then eaten in complete silence, but is full of reverence for the loss of those who would have been present in the empty chairs. I hope you'll consider getting the calendar and to join us to celebrate the Wheel of the Year. I beg your pardon. Hexes. Witches. During Samhain. Oh, yes. They will absolutely hex the daylights out of anyone giving them guff. If you know any witches, you had better do all that you can do to stay in their good graces, or you are in for a world of pain. I don't know any witches all that well myself. Oh, who gave Irma the little sailor's hat? Irma, spin around, baby. I just remembered our sponsors. How kind. Here, I'll just remind you that if you are of a nautical nature, well, I'm sure this fun group of ladies are just the new friends you're looking for. So be sure to see Dolly at the dockhouse on any given Sunday to sign up. please follow Irma and Mr. Darling as far as the veranda, and I will wish you a very good night and safe travels, my dear guests. Good night.
Well, madam, they're all out of the house.
Everyone? No, Wendy? She didn't stay behind?
I can only say that I didn't see anyone lag behind, either human or witch.
Well, she must have been happy. She did give Irma that sailor's hat.
She also gave Irma the sailor's skull.
Ah! Why do witches have to be so shifty? And now, a special announcement. For the first time ever, a beloved character from the Midnight Library has their own ongoing full-length chronicle of how they came to be. in the company
of witches.
And who could be more deserving of a weird, long story than Stefan Strangeways? If you're looking for an extra strange good time, my lovelies, the long-awaited story of Stefan Strangeways is now coming into reality. Stefan's detailed, serialized tale is now several episodes deep in our Patreon for all patrons at the $5 level and above. Why is his story in Patreon? I hear you ask. Because, my lovelies, Stefan's story is many times longer than any other story we've ever told. Ever. It is so extensive, it could be a season unto itself. Stefan's story runs concurrently with all of the early and ad-free readings posted a week earlier than when they are made public.
Me, Elmar.
Me, Wishesmin, Sedsums Lurby.
What?
Wishesmin, Sedsums Lurby.
Are there any witches in the story? My love, did you just get here? There's an entire family of witches in Stefan's story. To have a prowl around and see how very much you can get for very little, visit patreon.com/midnightlibrary. And yes, our fabulous merch can be found at Redbubble at redbubble.com/people/midnightlibrary. Or, if you're feeling possessed, you can buy us a bag of entrails on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/midnightlibrarypod. Thank you for helping the Midnight Library to stay open and ad-free.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.